Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and, of course, the views of our callers. We welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line Craig Robertson. Craig was a sniper. He was in the Marines. He was in the Vietnam. He worked for many years on the police force in Tulsa, Oklahoma. He's written 10 books. Two of the books we carry, it's called Kill Zone, A Sniper Looks at Dealey Plaza, and his book Medusa File. He certainly was involved. FBI had asked him to help with the investigation of the Oklahoma City bombing, and we're going to talk a little bit about the Oklahoma City bombing. You see, unless we really understand what happened there, we can't understand what happened as far as the downing of TW-800 and the cover-up of that. We can't understand what happened on 9/11, because if the government knew the bombing was coming, they were going to bomb the Murrah Building and did nothing to save the people's lives there, well, why should we be surprised that they would have done something similar as far as September 11th? Certainly we know that the government encouraged people to sail on the Lusitania back in 1915 when the Germans were publishing articles in the paper saying, don't go on the ship if you're an American, we're going to sink the ship. And the State Department was telling people to go, and almost 1,200 people lost their lives on that ship. And well over 100 of them were Americans. And then the Pearl Harbor, they knew the attack was coming on Pearl Harbor. Now we have all the information, and they left 2,800 Americans to die there. But let's get back to Oklahoma City, because Craig is doing some fascinating work on Oklahoma City. Craig, why don't you pick up the story, what we've learned recently about what the FBI has been suppressing from the American people with the full support of the media.
Well, you know, Dr. Stan, we're coming up on the anniversary here this month in a couple of weeks, and I'll be down in Oklahoma City speaking. We're having a get-together down there on April the 19th, I think it is, and I've got all kinds of new news to put in to the people that are coming down there. Some strange things have cropped up. You know, back on about day five of the Oklahoma City bombing, it was on a Sunday, and they raided Nichols Brothers Farm up in Michigan. And we, at that time, were still looking for Middle Easterners. We were looking for Middle Eastern males that were in front of the Murrah Building before the Ryder truck arrived, and riding in the truck with McVeigh and in several other places. And we actually uncovered a Islamic Jihad cell down there of Hamas people, and they were working with a Palestinian in Oklahoma City. It was a large cell of these guys, and they're made up of Iraqis that had been sent over here or brought over here by our own government through Carlisle Barracks, Pennsylvania, and scattered all over the country, and developed little 10 and 12 man cells there all over the place, from Boston to Los Angeles, from Texas to Chicago. And they had several cells in Oklahoma City. It was one of these cells that we had positive ID from eyewitnesses, pick some of these guys out, match them up to photographs, and say, those are the guys we saw in front of the Murrah Building. That's the guy we saw riding in a truck with McVeigh. But on day five, when they raided Nichols Brothers Farm, all of a sudden the media did a 180-degree turn and went the other direction, and we started hearing about militia members and militia organizations hate groups.
Craig, you hold that thought, because we're going to have to bring some other stations on board and lose some of our stations. We'll be back in just a moment with Craig Roberts to talk about Oklahoma. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. Our guest this afternoon is Craig Robertson, and we're going to be talking about the Oklahoma City bombing, and Craig was intimately involved with this. He was working for the police force in Tulsa, Oklahoma at the time, and of course the FBI had asked him, because of contacts he had with all sorts of people across the country, if they would work with him, and so initially, those of you who remember what happened that morning, remember, of course, the report was put out that there were Middle Easterners wearing a blue running suits, and they were in a brown pickup truck, and they were looking for them. And so that by day three or day four or five, Craig and the other people who were investigating to see what had happened were looking for the Middle East connection. And, of course, as Craig points out, immediately after the first Gulf War, our government, for some strange reason, had brought over thousands of Iraqis and had allowed them to settle all across America, where they set up Hamas cells, terrorist cells. Why would you do something like that? And there were at least two cells there in Oklahoma City, and they had identified John Doe 2 and John Doe 3 and John Doe 4, and they knew exactly who was working with Timothy McVeigh. And then suddenly, orders came from Washington, D.C., that it wasn't, of course, Middle Eastern at all. It was the right-wing militia, and it was all Terry Nichols, and it was all Terry and Timothy McVeigh. And you pick up the story from there, Craig.
Well, what we couldn't understand, working in the field, was where all this information was coming from, because it was coming over national television out of New York City. And when we tried to track down where this idea that militia people were involved, it was very interesting what came back. It took me a few days, but I found out through some of my media contacts that this whole change of events, this whole swaying of the case away from the actual bad guys to some fictitious people that was basically going to destroy the case, came from two sources, and that was the Anti-Defamation League of the B'nai B'rith and the Southern Poverty Law Center. And this was really hard to understand, because the ADL, which I think basically is Mossad-backed, and they're closely tied to Israel, you would think would jump up and down and say, gee, we told you, Arab terrorists, they're in Oklahoma City now, they're all over the place, you've got to help us, we've got to fight these guys, because that's the natural enemies of the Israelis. But that didn't happen. Instead, they went off on a tangent to some direction that just didn't make any sense at all.
Well, of course, a lot of these things really don't make sense unless you understand that our intelligence agencies maybe many times are not representing the best interests of their countries, but see all to be bound together with another agenda. Well, our guest this afternoon is Craig Roberts, and of course, he was pointing out that he felt that the change in the thrust of the investigation about the fifth day after the bombing of the Oklahoma City building, the Murrah building, came from the ADL, B'nai B'rith, and from the Southern Poverty Law Center, where Morris D is. And as Craig is pointing out, certainly the ADL, certainly many people have suggested, has strong ties to the Mossad. You would think that the Mossad would be doing everything they could say to say, look, it was these Arab terrorists, you know, we've been warning about the threat of the Arab terrorists, and they're threatening Israel, they're threatening you. But they didn't take that tack. Suddenly they're doing everything they can to draw attention away from the Arab terrorists. Doesn't make sense. So pick up the story there, Craig.
Well, we couldn't figure it out either. And what did Morris Dees and the Southern Poverty Law Center have to gain by going after people who weren't even involved that we could find out? And what interest did they have in it anyway? And that was a great big question mark in my mind, is why did the Southern Poverty Law Center have anything to say about the Oklahoma City bombing? Well, when you go and examine what they were doing at the time to make money, they had developed an organization called Klan Watch, and were putting out a newsletter against the Ku Klux Klan, and they were sending it out to all kinds of people who would donate money to them to show them, look, we're watching these hate mongers, these Ku Klux Klan guys, they're everywhere, and they're coming after you in white sheets. And basically, Ku Klux Klan was pretty much a dead issue. It was extremely, what was left of it was extremely infiltrated by different federal agencies. And Morris Dees had sued so many of these skinhead neo-Nazi and KKK groups that they were pretty much out of existence anyway. White Aryan Resistance and the Aryan Nation and all that was, just a handful of people. There was nothing to it. In Washington, D.C., hardly anybody had heard of anybody in a militia unit on the 5th of April of 1995, because I testified before Congress on the 5th of April of 1995, and I was telling people that, you know, people out in the Midwest and the West are getting extremely upset and worried about the government. I said they're worried that the people like the Clintons and the Renos and all the rest of this bunch are destroying the Constitution, destroying the country, and they're arming themselves to the teeth, and they're even forming militias. And they looked at me and they said, "What are you talking about?" So they didn't even have a clue that there was any such thing going on the 5th. But on about the 22nd or 23rd, all of a sudden, the militias were everywhere, and it's all their fault. It's talk radio, and it's Rush Limbaugh, and it's Pat Robertson, and it's all the right wing, and it's all the neo-Nazis, and that's who it is. Well, all that was doing was destroying our investigation, because it was taking the assets away. The FBI was told, do not investigate any more Islamic connections. From this point on, you're only going to chase neo-Nazis and militias and all this sort of stuff. Well, none of those leads ever went anywhere. Well, pretty much that destroyed the investigation. When we went to court, went to the grand juries, we couldn't get this information in. And then when it went to Judge Match's court up in Denver, he didn't want to hear anything about anything except is McVeigh involved, guilty or innocent? Is Nichols involved, guilty or innocent? He didn't want to have any information that came in tying Nichols to the Philippines or to Al Qaeda or to Ramzi Yousef or to any of the other people over there, Joaquin Murad. All of that whole bunch that was in Abu Sayyaf in the Philippines, that we could definitely, with Philippine Intelligence Service documents, tie Nichols to the Islamic terrorists on all the way up to Osama bin Laden.
Well, I think for our listeners, there's a couple of wonderful books written by Stephen Jones. They're both titled Others Unknown, and of course the second one is the Oklahoma City Bombing Conspiracy, and he points out that the judge gave him something, I don't know, $15 or $20 million to investigate this, the background of what had really happened and who was behind the bombing, and then when he had all this information, the judge refused to allow any of this to come into court, including anything going into the background, the fact that Timothy McVeigh, his sister, had started her testimony there in Denver saying that Timothy McVeigh had written and said he was part of a secret special forces unit that was tied to the government and was involved in illegal activity. That was brought out of the trial, not a word of that in the controlled media across America, because the implications of that are too horrible to think about. But of course, the tie-in between Terry Nichols and Sheikh Khalid Muhammad, and of course Ramzi Yousef and Murad over there's no question at all that Terry Nichols was taking all these trips over to the Philippines. Where was he getting the money? How was he getting tied up and meeting with these Islamic terrorists? And why wouldn't they allow that to be brought out at the trial?
Oh, it was incredible that we had all this information. We had boxes and boxes of files. We had eyewitness statements, and we couldn't present it in court. They were bound and determined to go Nichols and McVeigh, and that's it, and shut it down. As far as others unknown, forget it. Well, we started looking in different directions for different things, and we had different informants coming to us over a period of time, giving us other information that filled in some of the blanks, like, why the Murrah building? Why Oklahoma? It didn't have anything to do with Waco. The FBI didn't even have offices in that building. So why would they pick that one? And, of course, they came back and said, well, there's a daycare center there. Well, so what? There's a daycare center in a lot of federal buildings. So that, why Oklahoma? Then I get a call from Arkansas from a man who says he's a federal agent. And he's works for a three-letter or four-letter agency, whatever, and that the... they had investigated the Clintons when Clinton was governor of Arkansas, and their tie-ins to the MENA drug running, the money laundering, and Iran-Contra that was coming in through MENA, Arkansas. And the investigatory records went, when the Clintons went to Washington, D.C., they decided they didn't want to keep these things in Little Rock, so they sent them to Oklahoma City, and they put them in the Murrah building. Well, that's fine to have that one little piece of the puzzle if it's true. So we just take that, and we just kind of put it on the shelf, and we see what else happens. Well, when you go back and look, the most significant thing that happened on the day of the bombing, within an hour of the bombing, was they pulled everybody back, left people trapped in the buildings, and they brought over 50 guys in with blue raid jackets with no letters on them and a couple of box ambulances, and instead of rescuing people, they were pulling boxes of records out of the building, and then they drove off with them. And this ran from till almost noon, or even after, before they went back and started trying to get people out of the rubble again. Well, what were those records that were so important that they would stop rescuing people trapped in the rubble? Because there's no important office in the Murrah building. Most of it was the Social Security and HUD and that sort of thing. There was one small ATF office in there that didn't amount to much. Then they had the daycare and stuff, just bureaucracies and a whole empty floor and a couple of recruiting offices. So it really wasn't that significant of a target. But if you figure in or factor in those records that were in the building that we were never allowed to see, then that adds credibility to what this man said in his phone call. We also have to remember, we never saw the videotapes. There were at least three cameras that we know of, and probably more in the area, and two of them looked right straight down the front of the Murrah building and showed how many people got out of the Ryder truck and who they were. And the government still has those videotapes.
In fact, I know a fellow who actually sued them to try to get the videotapes, and this was 6 or 7 years after the explosion. They said they couldn't release them because there was still an ongoing investigation.
There's no investigation being done whatsoever.
To justify not having to turn the tapes over.
Right. You can't even give them information. Jana Davis took boxes of information and depositions and witness statements to the U.S. Attorney's Office, and they wouldn't touch it. She took them to the FBI. They wouldn't even take the box out of her hands.
Now, Jana Davis was the reporter from Channel 4 who had actually investigated this, and she had dead to rights. She knew who John Doe was, who was the fellow in the truck, the Muslim or the Near Easterner in the truck with Timothy McVeigh. The government was afraid to accept the information because then they'd have to give it to people.
Right. Well, as time goes on, we start filling in a lot of different blanks. We start making connections at times with different organizations. Some of them reach all the way back into Washington. Some of them go into the Mexican drug-running bunch, a guy named Juan Garcia Abrego, and I caught the FBI lying to me on that because I got information that Juan Garcia Abrego, who was a Mexican drug lord lieutenant that was involved in Iran-Contra and handled some of the land routes of the cocaine that was coming in during Iran-Contra across the Texas border, was involved with this, and that he sent two bagmen up to Mexico or up to Oklahoma City to help finance the bombing. Took money to help finance the bombing, so they could get rid of these records, evidently. And when I went to the FBI with all the information, I had a 3-page memo, and I gave it to him on one of our meetings. And I said, "Check this guy out and tell me what you think," because I'd never heard of him. And 3 days later, they said, "No, it doesn't exist. It's all hokum." I'll never forget that word. The guy doesn't exist. Don't have anything on him. It's not an issue. And it was about 6 months later, when I was out and working another case out in Arizona, that I came into the motel that night and turned the TV on, and they're dragging Juan Garcia Abrego off an airplane in Houston, and they had extradited him out of Mexico. And when I got home 3 days later, I went to the post office, and there on the wall was a wanted poster for Juan Garcia Abrego, and he's on the FBI's 10 most wanted list.
And yet they told you that he didn't exist.
They told me he didn't exist when he was on their 10 most wanted list.
Right.
And, I mean, that's pretty blatant. So I at that time, you just say, well, I just can't even work with the federal guys anymore because they're being controlled. They can't even effectively do their own job. Everything's being handled out of Washington, Louis Freeh and Janet Reno. I'm just going to do my own thing and work with the other people that I can trust. So that's what happened at that point. Well, we still could not figure out why they were going after the White Aryan Resistance and the Aryan Bank Robber Bunch and all of the and Elohim City and all of this stuff. I got a phone call from one of the FBI agents and said, "Do you know anything about a place called Elohim City?" And I've been in Oklahoma most of my life, and I'd never heard of the place. And, of course, it's not on the map or anything. And I said, "No, what is it?" "Some type of a white supremacist compound." And after the break, we'll talk about that for a second.
And, of course, there are all sorts of fascinating interconnections here. Some of it, is brought out intentionally to confuse people who are trying to get to the truth. But there is truth. And the one thing we can be certain of is the American people have been consistently lied to about so many things. And, of course, if we got the truth about Oklahoma City, we might not very well be in war in the Middle East today or going to war with Syria. Ladies and gentlemen, it's only a matter of time, in my estimation, before our boys are attacking Syria, and more will die. We'll be back in just a moment with Craig Roberts.
Anglo-American establishment gives you the documentation for Professor Quigley's allegation that there was a secret society created in England that ultimately came to dominate England and ultimately came to dominate the United States of America. The Anglo-American establishment will give you the books that you can read, written by men who were actually involved in the original secret society. Professor Quigley opens his book saying that most people have heard of the Rhodes Scholarships, and most people, a few people, have actually heard that Cecil Rhodes wrote a confession of faith, which was attached to his first five wills, talking about the formation of a secret society. But what almost no one in America realizes today is that that secret society was actually formed and still exists to this very day. The Anglo-American Establishment by Professor Quigley, Bill Clinton's mentor, is one of the most important books you'll ever read, and available by calling 1-800-5-HIV-WARP.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. In November of 1991, the 60 Minutes television show first reported on the French paradox, the fact the French violate every dietary rule for good health, eat a diet rich in fats and calories, and yet exhibit far better cardiovascular health than North Americans. Over a decade later, we know that molecules called polyphenols are responsible for the health benefits in red wine, but those molecules only remain stable in a sealed bottle of red wine. Longevinix is the first dietary supplement to stabilize red wine molecules in a sealed capsule, just like a corked bottle of red wine, providing red wine polyphenols without the calories, alcohol, and sulfite preservatives. One Longevinix capsule is equivalent in polyphenols to drinking 5 glasses of red wine. Call 866-405-4000 today to order Longevinix. It's a revolutionary dietary supplement. 866-405-4000.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Thierry. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763. Or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done, get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today, 800-544-8927, 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap, it's a miracle.
Well, Dr. Stan back here, our guest this afternoon, Craig Roberts. So pick up the story there from Craig.
Well, you know, I still had a real problem trying to figure out what the deal was with the Southern Poverty Law Center and the ADL, but specifically the Morris D's bunch on this and what interest they had in it. And several years ago by before we, all of a sudden we'd start finding some interesting information coming in. I had a chance to do a radio program with Mr. Jesse Trinidou, and Mr. Trinidou is a lawyer out of Salt Lake City. His brother, Kenneth Trinidou, was killed in the Oklahoma City Prison Transfer Center, Federal Transfer Center, at the Oklahoma City Airport, just not too long after the Oklahoma City bombing case.
He was really beaten to death, wasn't he?
They tried to make it look like a suicide. They wrote it up as a suicide, but he was actually beaten to death, and he even had injuries to the soles of his feet. He had handcuff ligature marks on his wrists. You know, when the family got the body and was able to take pictures of it and examine him.
Basically, they tried to cremate the body. You know, they just said it hanged himself, but we're going to be real good. You won't have to have any expense. We'll just cremate the body for you. It was all part of a government cover-up, so wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And so the Trinity family has been trying to sue, trying to get an investigation accomplished on what happened in the transfer center the night that Kenneth was killed. The Oklahoma City medical examiner had gone in there and said that there's an extreme amount of blood on the walls and ceiling, and that there, you know, this obviously wasn't a suicide. And
didn't they actually wash it all off? But of course, with the ultraviolet or whatever they used, they can actually see the residual of the blood even on the ceiling.
Right, and they did that, and they pretty much got, the federal government pretty much got Dr. Fred Jordan got him off the case and said, "Go away, this is federal property. We don't even want you here." Didn't want to hear what he had to say, and so on. Well, Jesse Trinidou, meanwhile, has filed several Freedom of Information Acts, and he's filed lawsuits, and he's demanded investigations, and
this
pretty
is,
much stayed on him.
And this is the brother, and he just happens to be, unfortunately for the government, an attorney. And so he is bound to determine, he's going to find out why they killed his brother. I mean, his brother was in there for some minor little infraction. You know, it wasn't anything serious at all. Apparently, he had turned his life around, was married, had a couple of kids, and they simply beat him to death. So what was this all about? Doesn't make any sense.
Well, that's what we were trying to find out, is what interest did they have in him? And of course, I got information that it could have been that he had overheard some things about people in the Oklahoma City bombing case, and Mr. Trinidou got information that they were looking at him as maybe knowing some of these Northwest bank robbery members and these guys that were out of Arkansas and out of Missouri and out of Pennsylvania that were doing these white Aryan resistance bank robbery things and so on. How much of that's true, we don't know, because of course everybody's dead that's involved in it. However, while he was doing his Freedom of Information request, he got some memorandums from the FBI that had been redacted, where they go in and they black out certain words and certain phrases and stuff. And he sent me some of this because he thought I was, you know, extremely knowledgeable on the case, and maybe I could fill in some of the blanks where they were blacked out.
And didn't they actually send him several of these same things, but they blacked out different places and different ones so that it made it even easier?
Well, yeah, it helped out a lot when they confirmed some of the stuff that we filled in, where one office would black out certain words and another office would black out different words, and you take the two memos and you can fill in some of the blanks.
And, of course, a lot of this ties into Timothy McVeigh.
Oh, absolutely, and even worse, it goes into Elohim City and beyond that. And this is where it really gets interesting, because part of one of these we were able to piece together, and we did it by counting the spaces in the blacked out areas and then filling different words in there like a crossword puzzle until one fit and made sense and matched the facts that we already knew existed. And I've got a part of one here that we put together, and this is where it's our version of what had been redacted, and it talks about the Oak Bomb Memorandum. And this was written on 1-4 of 1996, and it's called the SPLC Oak Bomb Memorandum, SPLC being the Southern Poverty Law Center. And it said that he got this one particular one from the bombing case from Omaha, which was working on the Midwest bank robbery case.
And, of course, this is coming from the FBI.
And this is coming from the FBI. And Jesse wrote that yesterday's memo had some crucial information that had been redacted from earlier copy, namely the FBI had a confidential informant in Cincinnati, Ohio, who may have been Sean Kenny, one of the bank robbers. With that information, it's now clear that there were at least two informants, including one at Elohim City, who I believe was Andrew Strassmeyer. With this information, plus what you sent, talking about me, yesterday, set out below is an interpretation of the crucial paragraph from the bottom of page 3 of the memo, with the bolded words being inserts of what was apparently redacted. So, and this is what we put together.
All right, you're going to have to hold that off until we get back here, but I think it's so vitally important to understand that there was a relationship between Timothy McVeigh and government agents. Andy Strassmeyer, in fact, almost everybody at Elohim City was working for the government.
Very important. epidemic. Actually, it's a book I wrote back in 1991. It tells you the story of the politics of the AIDS epidemic and the fact that doctors have been blocked at every turn from doing what was really necessary to stop the spread of this horrible plague, both in the United States and throughout the world. AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, it gives you my story of my effort working with an organized medicine, the fact that the doctors of the state of California consistently voted and supported an effective public health policy, and at every turn their efforts were frustrated by those working within organized medicine, both at the state and national level, and the tragedy is that people are dying in America today unnecessarily. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, because you need to understand the background of this epidemic to understand what is really happening medically in America today.
Sophisticated investors are buying gold and silver today because the dollar has lost almost 50% of its value in relationship to the euro, and the price of gold and silver has increased almost 40%. If you're interested in learning more about precious metal investing, why don't you call Bo at 831-423-0177. That's 831-423-0177, or visit him at Elliott's Stamp and Coin Shop in downtown Santa Cruz at 141 South River Street in the San Lorenzo office building, which is located between Trader Joe's and the Signature Twin Movie Theater. Bo's telephone number is 831-423-0177. That's 831-423-0177. And he's located at 141 South River Street in the San Lorenzo office building. And if you mention you heard about Elliott Stamp and Coin Shop on Radio Liberty, why, you'll get a 15% discount on some non-investment items.
Would you like your school to reflect the same traditional family values as your home? Then VHM Christian School is just what you're looking for. A quality Christian education taught by credentialed, energetic, and loving teachers for ages preschool through 8th grade. We invite you to visit VHM on March 9th from 10 to 11 a.m. This is a special visitation day to acquaint everyone interested in our comprehensive program of faith integrated with learning. VHM is located in the Live Oak area of Santa Cruz and stands for Virgil Hosselt Memorial. But for over 50 years, it has become affectionately known as VHM to the surrounding community. Aside from the visitation day, you may also be interested in the Children's Health Expo on March 13th from 2 to 4 p.m. Speak with experts in the field of health, exercise, and diet with ideas to help you and your children. Call 475-4762 for more information. That's VHM at 475-4762. Being taught of God by the sea.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest this afternoon, Craig Roberts, who was actually working initially with the FBI on the case. He was working for the Tulsa Police Force. He retired, but he's kept up investigating this ever since then. And now we find another factor. We hear this incredible story about the man who was beaten to death in a federal facility. And, of course, you can go up on the Internet and pull down this story. It's well known, totally covered up by the government. After all, how do you admit that your people have killed somebody and nothing is done to prosecute them? Pick up the story there, Craig.
Well, we started piecing this memorandum back together again, and this is what it reads when everything fits and makes sense. It says, information has also been received through the Southern Poverty Law Center, SPLC, that one Andreas Strassmeyer, a.k.a. Andy the German, evidently received a telephone call from Timothy McVeigh on or about 4/17 of 95. 2 days prior to the Oak Bomb attack, when Strassmeyer, per a source of the SPLC, was in the white supremacist compound at Elohim City, Oklahoma. Strassmeyer allegedly has had a lengthy relationship with Timothy McVeigh, one of two indicted Oak Bomb defendants. The source of the SPLC advised that Strassmeyer is currently residing with Kirk Lyons in Black Mountain, North Carolina, and plans to leave the U.S. via Mexico in the near future. The source further advised that he or she has learned that Strassmeyer is fleeing U.S. for an unknown reason. Prior Oak Bomb investigation determined that McVeigh had placed a telephone to Elohim City on 4/5 of 95, a day that he was believed to have been attempting to recruit a second conspirator to assist in the Oak Bomb attack. The Oak Bomb command post is attempting to verify the version of events as set forth by the source and develop further information. Now, what's incredible about this, the way it fits together, is Kirk Lyons pops. It's evidently the lawyer that pops up in this memo, because he's the one that did smuggle Strassmeyer out of the country and got him back to Germany through Mexico. So that part fits, and his name fits in the little blocks, and it did say North Carolina, where Black Mountain is where he has his law firm. And what's interesting is you've got Kirk Lyons, who is the guy that defends like the Ku Klux Klan and the White Aryan Resistance and all of these guys, and he was also the lawyer that defended the Waco survivors, and defended them so well they just got 40 years apiece. Then you have Morris Dees, who's the exact opposite, and he's the one that sues all the people that Kirk Lyons defends.
And Chris, what you have to understand is the government has everything infiltrated. I mean, they infiltrated thoroughly the mafia, they infiltrated the Communist Party, they infiltrated the White Aryan Resistance, they infiltrated even the Islamic terrorist cells, but they can't tell us that because, of course, that would mean they knew it was going to happen ahead of time, and they certainly had been notified ahead of time by Carol Howe, who was at Elohim City, that there was a plan to attack the Murrah building. And, of course, when she tried to come out and tell the truth, in fact, she was supposed to testify at the McVeigh trial. Instead of that, the government indicted her and tried to send this woman, who was a patriot, who risked her life to get into Elohim City to protect the American people. They tried to send to prison, you know, for 20 or 30 years as a terrorist, knowing full well this was only done to silence her, to keep her story from coming out. This is a terrible, terrible thing, but most people have never heard of Carol Howe.
Well, it was interesting is I went out to California about 2 months after the bombing, and while everything in this part of the country was still quite focused on that, a lot of news coming out every night on the case, it was a total news blackout outside
sure.
the state of Oklahoma.
Right.
There was nothing in California in June and July of that year about the Oklahoma City bombing case, and we were providing all kinds of information coming out. There was new things happening every day. By then, we had already been to the Philippines. We had made the connections to the Mexican Mafia. We had made connections all the way up into New York City to places in Washington, D.C. And none of this was coming out in the media, showing that the media is totally controlled by the Washington hierarchy. There's nothing that's going to come out if they don't want you to know about it or see it. And at the same time, they were misdirecting the entire investigation. They had brought in a giant black semi-truck, parked it in Oklahoma City, put a fence around it, and that became the counterterrorism task force command post. Basically, they told local agents, you guys just go on with your regular cases, and we're going to handle this bombing case. And what they really did is they destroyed the evidence. They got rid of the Murrah building. You know, they dug a giant pit, hauled it off, and buried it.
Before anybody could, they wouldn't even allow the defense attorney to bring in experts to find out if there had been explosive charges placed upon the vertical pillars that were holding it up, because most people who study this know very well that there was no way that the bomb, as it was placed, could have done the damage. There had to be internal charges, but they couldn't allow that to come out, so they wouldn't allow the defense to bring in experts and examine anything.
It was just one thing after another. I've been a policeman all my life. I know how to work a case. And they were breaking every rule in the book every single day and turning the thing upside down. There was more roadblocks that occurred on almost a daily or weekly basis than almost we could circumvent. I went back to my contact, the FBI, and I said, look, I got to know something. I said, I wrote a book on the Kennedy assassination. You read it. It's called Kill Zone. And he nodded his head, and I said, now look, I've got a question. In 1963, after the Kennedy assassination, they had Oswald in jail, and of course, Ruby kills Oswald, they arrest Ruby, and for the next few months, they send FBI agents hither and yon, stacking up, 302s, your investigation reports, on people that had nothing to do with anything and didn't know anything, but it made a giant mound of paperwork. Showed what a great investigation they did because they interviewed half of Texas. And then it goes to the Warren Commission. The Warren Commission is totally controlled to where they come out. Lee Harvey Oswald, to the exclusion of all others, is the lone nut with the gun. Case closed. When it got to the Warren Commission, there were people who testified that when they read their own testimony later in the Warren report, they'd say, that's not what I said. They changed my words all around. They made sure that people who heard more than three shots, I'm sorry, never got to testify. If they heard any shots coming from the grassy knoll, they didn't get to testify. The only people allowed to testify were those that fit the blueprint of the crime. And then that closed the case, and on down the road we went. Now, I'm asking you, as an FBI agent, is this the same thing that's happening now? Are you guys being sent all over the place to take insignificant reports and interview people that really don't know much just to create a volume of paperwork, and you're not really allowed to go where the real meat of the case is? And he just kind of nodded his head, and he says, you got it.
That must be very, very frustrating, because I'm sure that a lot of good people who work in the FBI are trying to do a good job, but they're not allowed to.
Well, they're a political arm now. And you know, it used to be when Hoover was in control, and I'm not a fan of Hoover either, but when Hoover was in control, at least he could distance the agents and the cases away from the bureaucrats. But Watergate was the turning point, and after Hoover was killed or died, whatever, then the president started a new deal of being able to appoint his own FBI director and appoint his own CIA director. And so when you control the very agency that would be the agency that would investigate you, then you don't have anything to worry about. It's like when they got a hold of the CIA out of that task force in Los Angeles and said, you know, we've got information that the CIA has been running cocaine into Los Angeles and getting in the hands of the street gangs here. And the CIA 30 days later comes back and says, well, we investigated ourselves and we're okay. You know, nothing wrong here. Everything's just fine. So we could find no wrong. So when you're able to do that, then where's the fear? You know, if you're not worried about being hung for treason or arrested, if there's no oversight of the president, then Clinton proved you can literally get away with anything you want. Sky's the limit, because you control the investigation yourself. You pretty much control Congress if you've got most of those guys in your pocket too. So he gets impeached and he's still there. What does it take anymore? It used to be if you caught somebody doing something wrong, they'd resign in disgrace and leave. Now, you can just get away with anything you want. So this is what we're seeing out here in the law enforcement world. I'm sure these local federal agencies are seeing the same thing all the time and deal with it on a consistent basis. In fact, I had a friend that was in the ATF, and he said there's two organizations in the world that he hates, and he wouldn't name one of them, but he said the other was the ATF in Washington. and he was a local ATF guy. They've got their problems in dealing with it. They're, you know, they run around trying to investigate a case like this, and their hands are cuffed. That's like Strassmeyer. Strassmeyer has a car at LOM City. It's a station wagon. Roommate decides he's going to take the car to town and buy some groceries or something, and on the way he runs into a highway patrol roadblock. They take the car, and the guy doesn't have a driver's license, so they arrest him, and they tow the car. The record driver inventories the contents of the car and finds a briefcase. In the briefcase, he finds several documents. He finds letters to Strassmeyer from some colonel at Fort Bragg. It has letters to the governor of Oklahoma and back, and to various places with the State Department and so on. Well, before he could even list everything that was in this briefcase, his phone's ringing, and he's being threatened by the Oklahoma State government, by the people in Washington, and by Fort Bragg. You will turn that car and that briefcase back over to Strassmeyer. You will not look at anything. You will not record anything, and so on. I've still got a newspaper article someplace that tells all about the stuff this guy went through. Well, if this guy was an insignificant German immigrant trying to sneak in over here and get into this covenant community,
basically, it was a white supremacist. They were anti-Nazi. They were, they were a pretty radical group. And yet, of course, everything points out the fact that Strassmeyer was an agent of somebody's. He'd infiltrated there. The BATF one time wanted to raid that because they heard they were planning some bombings, and the Justice Department wouldn't allow them to. That's what's so incredible. It was almost like these were all being protected. Sort of like many of the Islamic terrorist movements here in America today.
Well, Strassmeyer was a lieutenant in the Panzer Grenadiers, and he worked for German intelligence. So he was recruited and brought over here to infiltrate the neo-Nazi community and this guy to find out who was sending all of this Nazi stuff to Germany. And we had people in Germany working that end of it. So he was probably an exchange agent, so to speak. And so they infiltrated him in through Elohim City, and from Elohim City, that was going to be a springboard to get him on to other places, because he had contacted and become friends with guys like Dennis Mahon in Tulsa, and Dennis Mahon was with the White Aryan Resistance, and which is Metzger's bunch out of Idaho, Hayden Lake, Idaho. And he also, coordinated with what the survivors of what used to be the Covenant Sword and Arm of the Lord, the CSA, over in Arkansas, which is pretty much defunct at the time, and they may not have known that, but Richard Schnell, who was one of the leaders of the CSA, was executed on 4/19 of 95, just after the Murrah Building bombing, and then he was taken back to Elohim City and buried. Just a coincidence.
But I think the head of Elohim City, this right-wing extremist group, was an FBI informant. That was Raymond Mylar. Carol Howe was there, certainly Randy Strassmeyer. They were all tied into the government, but we don't know how many of the people at this radical group belonged to one or another intelligence organization. So they probably didn't even know that the other people were involved in the intelligence organizations, but they have all of these organizations thoroughly infiltrated.
Well, this one was infiltrated to the point Dennis Mahon, I'm convinced now, was an FBI informant at the time. Strassmeyer was a BATF and FBI informant, and an informant to the Southern Poverty Law Center, who's an informant for the FBI. So basically, we had informants watching the informants, and they knew about the bomb planning before it ever happened, and all of the information was going to the FBI. All the information was going to the Southern Poverty Law Center and onto the FBI and the ATF. So the government had foreknowledge. So what did the government do? They go down, they stake out the building. And they've got people in SWAT uniforms that night hiding around in the shadows. They've got a surveillance car a block away with a camera taking pictures. The next morning, their vehicle dries up. And at 6 o'clock in the morning, they decide, well, nothing happened overnight, so we're going home. And then at 9 o'clock, the Ryder truck shows up. And of course, we all know now that the Ryder truck was a diversion, that the actual explosive charges were on the columns inside the building. And there's even some speculation now that there might have been some kind of a mini nuke down there, since some of the explosions went down 2 subfloors and there was more radioactivity in the scene than there was ammonium nitrate traces. We had early indications of high levels of tritium down there, and I'm not a nuclear physicist, so I'm not sure what all that means, other than the fact that why else would you want to bury the building unless it was for radiation purposes. So some of those guys that came out early on in the case and said, we think there was a mini nuclear device in the building that we kind of scoffed at and laughed at, may have been right to begin with. We don't know. But we do know that the Ryder truck didn't do the damage.
All right, let's go to Chris, who's calling in from Kentucky. We're almost out of time. Chris, you have a quick question?
Yeah, I'll make it really quick. I was watching a video, Craig, and thank you very much for your service. I wanted to mention that the survivor, I don't recall her name, but there were two men that ran in front of that media camera that was never known that she saw in the building before.
Oh, yeah. We actually have that video. We offer that. It's called The Cover-Up in Oklahoma City.
Yes, right. I do have that. And did the FBI ever track those two men down? And was it ever heard of again, Craig?
As far as I know, not only did they not track them down, they didn't even want to. And my sources tell me that one of those guys was at Waco. Out by the roadblocks, and we had his picture taken there, and that he knew who McVeigh was, and he knew Strassmeyer. And his name was Gary something.
Chris, it all ties together, but fortunately we have Craig pulling all the little dots together. Thanks so much for calling. We're just about out of time. We got about 3 minutes for you to wrap this up.
Well, it's an ongoing investigation. It's like the FBI says, it's an ongoing investigation, but they're not the ones doing it.
Right.
So there's several others of us doing this, still doing the work. Even though I'm retired now, I still got my hand in it, and I still kind of share my information and files to those that are carrying the ball and carrying the torch, and I still go speak on it. And we're going to have the rally in Oklahoma City this month. During that time, about April 19th, I think it is. And I'll be speaking down there, and Jesse Trinidad will be coming down. So anybody in the Oklahoma City area, get a hold of Charles Key. You look him up on the Internet, and he'll give you all the particulars.
Well, now, what about where does he fit into this whole thing? I mean, why would they have killed him? Did they think he was tied into the bank robbers, the White Aryan Resistance, or why? Why did they kill him?
Well, that's what we're not sure of, and Jesse Trinidad thinks that it's because they have tied him into these bank robbers that were supposedly helping finance McVeigh on this thing. which is all misdirection. I don't know where they got that information, but McVeigh didn't need to worry about financing anyway.
Or do you think that maybe this whole thing, they set up this intentionally just to confuse people, because they will do this sort of thing?
Oh, yeah. It's all smoke and mirrors.
In other words, so he got killed. Are they really concerned about it? I mean, there's so many people have died. In fact, it was Bill Clinton's girlfriend who actually took a list of 50 people who died very strangely during the Clinton years and put it on this chair of this woman who was going to testify against him. Monica Lewinsky had a list of 50 people who died, and she said to Linda Tripp, "Do you really want to testify against the president? What did that tell you? And where is the outcry from our leaders?" Craig, thanks very much. Do you have a website people can go to?
Go to riflewarrior.com.
Riflewarrior.com, and when we get back, I'm going to tell you how to get Craig's great books. We carry them right here at Radio Liberty. Thanks so very much for being with us.
Bye-bye.
A very important book is called AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic. Actually, it's a book I wrote back in 1991 that tells you the story of the politics of the AIDS epidemic and the fact that doctors have been blocked at every turn from doing what was really necessary to stop the spread of this horrible plague, both in the United States and throughout the world. AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, it gives you my story of my effort working with an organized medicine, the fact that the doctors of the state of California consistently voted and supported an effective public health policy, and at every turn their efforts were frustrated by those working within organized medicine, both at the state and national level, and the tragedy is that people are dying in America today unnecessarily. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, because you need to understand the background of this epidemic to understand what is really happening medically in America today.
Leading-edge dentists know the profound effect dental materials and procedures have on the health of the entire body. If you've been searching for a holistic trained dentist who can safely treat you, look no further. Dr. David Biles has been a leader in the Santa Cruz dental community for nearly 20 years. He built a solid reputation providing exceptionally high-quality cosmetic and restorative dental care long before learning the very real hazards of common dental practices. Now, as a faculty member of the Institute of Natural Dentistry, Dr. Biles has begun lecturing nationally to other dentists on alternative and complementary dental care. On request, Dr. Biles will safely remove toxic dental materials from your mouth while substituting them with safe, non-allergenic restorations. Call Dr. Biles today and take the next step to improve your health. With sedation and nitrous oxide available, Dr. Biles can help even the most anxious patients. Call 423-0121 and schedule a visit now. That's 423-0121.
And this is Dr. Stan. Let me just mention to our listeners in the Monterey Bay Area that my son went to Virgil Hosselt Memorial, 25 years ago, got a wonderful Christian education. Before we went off, we moved to South Africa for a time, but it was a great place for him to go to school, and we've always been very appreciative, and certainly our secretaries, his son and daughter, go there at the present time, and you need a Christian-based education. They do a great job. These children have learned so much, and of course the nice thing is they're well behaved. They teach them manners and discipline, and of course they teach them the fear of the Lord, and that's really the way we should bring our children up. You send them to government schools, they're going to destroy their faith in God, they're going to destroy their faith in family, they're going to destroy their faith in country, and they're going to turn those children against their parents. They have a whole different agenda, and ladies and gentlemen, you think you're having trouble with your kids? Why is that? Why is it that children who are raised in Christian schools don't have the same problems? Why don't you look into it? Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and let me just mention we do carry Craig's book, Medusa File. If you haven't read it, if you're going to read one book about what's going on, that would be the Medusa File. And then of course, his other book, Killzone, A Sniper Looks at Dealey Plaza, The Story of the Assassination of President Kennedy. We recommend both of those books to you because we think they're very, very important. And then, of course, we have a good deal of information on the Oklahoma City bombing. We have our initial interviews on Oklahoma City. And then we have the update on Oklahoma City, which nobody else has. We have an interview with Carol Howe's attorney. Who is Carol Howe? Well, she was the woman who infiltrated Elohim City for the BATF. And she found out that they were going to blow up the Murrah building. And she reported it to the BATF. And they knew the building was going to be blown up. But because she had reported it and she knew what was going to happen, they had to silence her. So they falsely indicted her, and her attorney was Clark Brewster. And it's a great interview. I suggest you get it and listen to it. I don't know anybody else who's interviewed him, and so many other people who have information on what happened there. And you need to understand that the government knew the building was going to be blown up, and they left the people to die. I tell then, of course, that we have the Oklahoma City bombing. We have the Oklahoma City bombing update. We have a video. It's called Cover Up in Oklahoma City. And there, of course, you'll see the film footage that was shot immediately after that. You'll see the film footage this young man was talking about the woman who worked in the building and had seen these people in there working in the basement, presumably laying the explosive charges. And then, of course, you see them on the film. So the information is all there. But that's why they had, of course, to silence everybody. That's why they couldn't allow the truth to come out. So you really want to get our four-tape set on Oklahoma City. Our four-tape set, Oklahoma City Update. The video, Cover-Up in Oklahoma City. And then we have another video that, of course, is with an informant who actually was working with the drug smugglers who were actually bringing the explosives in that were going to be used for this. And so you're going to get the two videos. You can get the 2-4 tape sets with the Oklahoma City special. We actually offer specials where you get the 2-4 tape sets, you get the two videos, and I think that's $69.95, and we pay the postage on that. If you're interested in having a great deal of information you're never going to get elsewhere, why? Because they cannot let the American people know the truth, and they're certainly never going to let you know that when Timothy McVeigh's sister testified in the trial in Denver, she read from the letter that Timothy had written her saying, "I am involved with a special forces secret organization, secret team that is involved with illegal activity." What do you think that illegal activity was? Why didn't anybody ever tell the American people that? It's all in Stephen Jones' books. But you know, Dan Rather, and when Tom Brokaw was working, why, he and even the people on the conservative side, they never mentioned this sort of thing. I wonder why. Well, you get our material by giving us a call at 1-800-544-8927. If you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, or seen the video, or listened to the tape, you need to, because this is the only way you'll understand that we're involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield, and you'll be introduced to the demonic forces and their plan for the mass extermination of the majority of the population of this country. And we simply quote not from what I say, but from what they say. People like Barbara Marks Hubbard, who ran for the Democratic nomination for the vice presidency back in 1984, who was a consultant to the government. And you'll read Barbara Marks Hubbard's writings from her book that was channeled to her by a demonic spirit called The Revelation, the Book of Co-Creation. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Go to our website at radioliberty.com. If you'd like to get a free copy of our November newsletter, Going into the Background of Fluoride and How They're Poisoning Our Children, we'll be glad to send it to you free of charge. Help us get the truth out. Learn how to present this to other people so they understand the true spiritual nature of what we're up against. And then pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Until tomorrow, may the Lord be with you.